Can yoga and meditation actually increase your stress? Stand by. Dr. Dorina Rode is with us on The Ed Till Show.
It's the Till. Over 30 and you're laughing still. And it's positioned in the art of will. Hey, Mr. Till.
Dr. Rode, welcome to The Ed Till Show on Starcom Radio Network. How are you today?
I'm fabulous. Great to be here. Thank you, Ed.
Great. I've never liked yoga and meditation. I've always been against them. No, I'm serious. I think it's really, really empty, vapid self-delusion. And I wonder if the reason that it causes stress is that people eventually realize how dopey both of those things are. What was the word they used to use when I was a kid? Oh, it's quaint. Oh, it's sweet. Really? Did some guy sit up on a mountain 3,000 years ago? Did he have a good day? Well, that's not going to help you do the budget, pal. Meeting in 10 minutes. See you in the conference room. So is it the disappointment of how zero those things are that cause them to increase stress? Or why do they, in fact, make people more stressed out?
Well, there might be some disappointment in there, and sometimes people bend over backwards, and that could stress them out when their back goes out. But what I'm talking about is more that when the mind-body connection, when you start doing stuff where you're actually focused on moving energy in the body, it can bring up unresolved trauma, which then can make you feel kind of more emotional, more stressed out.
Now, that's interesting. How would unresolved trauma hide out, not be bugging you, then when you're trying to improve yourself, I guess you kind of open up that closet and you go, oh my God, we never cleaned out this closet. So unresolved trauma is in there. But how does it become dormant that you wouldn't be uncomfortable because of it and searching to get rid of it? How could it be in there as a surprise?
You know, that is like a mystery. For myself, I actually had a lot of child abuse when I was young, and I didn't remember any of it. And sometimes when you're a child, the trauma can be so extreme that you just repress it. There's a psychological protection where you just say, okay, that didn't happen, or I didn't understand it. So you kind of, it gets locked in the subconscious somewhere. And we operate on 100% of our mind, but 10% is only 10% conscious, and the rest is subconscious. So it's kind of ruling us anyway, but it's locked in there. And then other times it can be small things that are just kind of eating away at you. So people who have like low self-esteem and stuff, sometimes there's an unresolved, what I would call an unresolved trauma, because they had a situation maybe when they were younger that they got embarrassed or something like that. And then it kind of got locked in the subconscious where they don't remember this, what happened. All they know is that they feel uncomfortable around people, or they don't feel like they're worthy or they're enough.
Wow. Now, this kind of thing, what, the mind compartmentalizes it? Is this like a self-defense thing? It's so horrible that to protect myself, I kind of put it away. And then the intervention of the yoga or the meditation or the suggestion of looking to yourself is what triggers it? How does it get boxed away to not interfere with you, yet discoverable enough to recognize it?
Well, I don't think it's actually boxed away so much that it doesn't interfere with you, but you've learned to cope with it. So for me, I was depressed and anxious for decades of my life. And had no idea why, you know, but I knew that when I did these like meditation and yoga and Qigong and stuff like that, it actually didn't make me feel so great. I don't know why I stuck with it. Most people would just give it up. But for some reason, like you were saying at the beginning, it's like, I thought it was going to be healthy. So I just did it. But if you really start looking at your life, you can see examples of how it's actually affecting you. So signs of unresolved trauma in day-to-day life can look like addictions. It can look like overeating, compulsive behaviors. It could be just daydreaming or spacing out. Or it could be just a certain level of dissatisfaction with work and life. So like there's a disconnect between you and the rest of the world.
Now, is it something about how the state of mind in order to be effective in yoga and meditation. You're relaxing, right? They want you to relax. And the goal is for you to get some kind of, you know, peaceful, healthy rhythm going. Like, this is the way you should feel. Get to that level of balance is a word they use often. You got to get to that right balance. So are the triggers triggered by going and cooperating with the yoga and the meditation? In other words, in order for you to be a good yoga student, do you have to relax some of the things you're using to protect yourself? And that's why these things can come back on you, because you kind of had them at bay. But when you surrender to the music and the sitar at sunrise and you're on your yoga mat, well, you know, you're making yourself as vulnerable as possible. That's when bad stuff would come and get you. Is that how it works?
You know, I'm not. I mean, if that was the case, then every time we went to sleep or took a nap or something, we'd be open to that. I think there's more to it than that. And the key part is there's a level of awareness. So you're not just lying there relaxing. You're actually feeling your breath in and out, or you're focused on your body. You know, so there's a certain level where you're starting to actually focus on your body. And so if it's a trauma, especially if it's a trauma of sexual abuse, which affects, you know, 1 in 4 women had sexual abuse as a child, and 1 in 6 men had sexual abuse as a child. So if it's something like that, the connection, there, what happens when that abuse happens is there's a disconnect between the body. So as soon as you start becoming more focused on the body and more connected, there's an opportunity for that to begin to loosen up. And so it's not just the relaxation, it's the awareness that you're now being more connected to your body.
Got it. Dr. Dorina Rode is our guest, an award-winning speaker, author, and life coach. She has a PhD in physiology, a degree in behavioral health counseling, and over 20 years' experience using alternative modalities to help people and organizations get unstuck. Now, that's a great word. Getting unstuck. People who are stuck in bad marriages, stuck in a bad career, stuck in a situation that the circumstances are driving me nuts. What gets us stuck? How do we first get stuck? What happens to us? Do we surrender? Do we get worn down? What gets us stuck?
What gets us stuck is that we have some sort of limiting belief or block that's in the subconscious. It goes back to that idea again that, you know, we think, you know, we're Americans. We want to be in control of our life. We've got, you know, we're proactive. But the problem is only 10% of our mind is actually conscious, and we can use that. So the 10% says, I'm going to go on a diet, or I'm going to be in a great relationship, or I'm going to make money. But the 90% of our mind that's subconscious is actually ruling the show when it comes down to it. Some people can willpower enough, use their conscious mind enough to overcome that. But most of us, we fail at our diets, you know, which is shown by the increasing amount of obesity in the United States. And, you know, we fail at our relationships.
Yeah.
So there's things
now,
that are in the subconscious.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But I want to break in there, right? Because we're...
You want to break in there.
I want to break in on that one point there about the obesity outbreak. Okay, we're the same society says don't fat shame. If it's so bad to be obese, there should be fat shaming. So I don't trust the zeitgeist. I think it's always looking to enable bad behavior. Is that am I overly suspicious of it?
I don't quite understand what your point is there.
Well, you know, you can't say obesity's bad and then have no fat shaming. Fat shaming is a help to the fat, that they're fat and they should hear it, just like mirrors don't lie. So, you know, we're not sincere about being healthy if we don't believe in fat shaming. So what
I see that people, fat shaming's gonna work.
Well, it has. Look at how upset the fat people get. That shows you it's working. Huh? I'm sorry, what?
They get upset, but they don't lose weight. It doesn't
help
them.
That's their problem. They're offensive to me by being fat. They send their fat kids to my kid's school, and now my kid wonders, and they get online, and they want us to go slow. It's a hot day. Can't you? No, we're going to go fast. You need to be fat shamed. You need to know you did something wrong. So I think that's the problem. You have a big contradiction. You have an enabling of exactly what we know is wrong. You know what I mean? I mean, we got to be sincere about this. I mean, I think it's horrible to have an obese population that's as well educated and is you have so much at your disposal choice wise, and then you go ahead and ruin your health. Then you show up at some doctor's office and start blowing up the price of everything because of you and your behavior. So it seems to me, to be consistent, we would say, it's horrible, we don't want this to happen. But then when it happens, we'd be calling it out. So people would be, whoa, I didn't realize my behavior was so bad. But instead we go, don't mention that. Even though it's horrible, even though it could kill these people, even though it brings heart attacks and all kinds of disease and all that, don't make them feel bad about it. And you say, well, you know, we can't have it both ways. You're either going to tell people what's bad is bad, and they're going to feel what? Bad, like they should. Or you can have the opposite. You can have the other people say, look, this is why I never did it. This is why I'm not obese. You see what he's talking about? He's right. That's why I'm not obese. Why they're obese, I don't know. But they made a big boo-boo instead of saying, it's all right. It's okay. What do they call them? BBW women now? Look how great it is to be over. And you say, no, it's not great. There's nothing great about it. Zero is great about how overweight you are. So that lack of candor, I think, kind of hurts the healthiness of the population.
Well, let's go to the extreme. It sounds like we should pass laws and put these people in jail. I mean,
But why not just go for making them feel bad and let them make their own? Well, make them make their own choice. In other words, if somebody has to come in and police you, that means you're so pathetic you can't take care of yourself. If you hear the words and they have an effect on you, well, let's see where it goes. If some people are like, you know what? I agree it's not good, but there's no more that I can do. All right. Well, of course we'll give you help. But for the other people luxuriating in their horrible health and then running around, say, look at me, how unhealthy I am. This is really cool. You say, well, you know, it's not cool.
You're talking about some of the signs of unresolved trauma, right? So we've got people that have got trauma that is unresolved. So they've got a compulsive behavior, which is to overeat. So if you shame them, they're going to do more of their compulsive behavior because you've just hit their trigger point, which is the same trigger point that makes them eat to begin with. So you're not working in a proactive kind of way because you're not dealing with actually what the problem is. You're thinking it's a conscious problem. That somehow they should just change their behavior, but they're not able to. In fact, we as Americans are so convinced that we're supposed to take care of ourselves that we wouldn't even imagine, we pretend it's okay to be overweight. Because
we
tried the diet and it didn't work for us. We couldn't get it to work, and then we're already shaming ourselves.
Right. Well, you know the one I think about? Here's the example I think of, right? There was a great film in the 1950s called The Man with the Golden Arm. Frank Sinatra played a heroin addict who wanted to quit. And it's an award-winning scene when he's withdrawing. But he's voluntarily withdrawing. So the character there is enormous. He shows character because he's willing to take the sweats, the broken knuckles from punching the wall, bring it because I'm getting out of this thing. Strength. Now, you know, what we're doing here with the obesity is kind of allowing collapse to continue. We're not saying you need to fight. You need to do what Sinatra did against heroin. You need to take it. Say, I know this is going to be miserable. That's why I'm doing it, because it's of so much value. And I think that gets lost when we start with the BBW lifestyle. Then you're really inoculating all of it. You know what I'm saying in terms of behavior. I don't know what will really work, but it looks weird to say, it can kill you, obesity, but yet you can join a club for BBW women and have fun with it and luxuriate in it. No, you can't. You know, you can say you wanna, but that's upside down. There should be no joy. No joy at all. You're wiping out your lungs. You're killing your pancreas. You're going to be dead young. There should be nothing good about it, if we were being honest, right?
I'm all about moving beyond judgment. So,
see, that's it. That's what I'm saying. I think judgment's integral to success. I don't think you can get behavioral change without judgment. That's I'm glad you put your finger on it there. Society has stopped judging so much bad behavior, but it costs society a fortune to tolerate the bad behavior. That's what I find a little counterintuitive. You see where I'm going with that?
I see where you're going. I'm also aware that we're in this, like, free country, you know, that people... I mean, I agree
but the freedom,
I kind of get upset when people make choices that then are going to cost me money.
But the freedom... But we do want the freedom to call them fat, stupid, and a problem. We don't want to pretend
listening earlier, and you said something about being a good Catholic and stuff.
I'm not sure if these are... Oh, well, listen. The Catholics need to go to confession
about calling people fat.
Well, just the opposite. No. We're going to be rewarded for telling them the truth about themselves and not being afraid they're too weak to hear the truth. That's what the point I was trying to make before. It's hard today to stand up for any principle that people don't like already. And obesity, I find, really offensive, because it ruins every aspect of their life. And mortality, and then you could pick your favorite organ system. Well, let me ask it this way. Meditation and yoga have had a reputation of health and sacrifice and kind of that aesthetic living, where you try not to be, polluted with the world and try to be purist. I mean that aesthetic in that old meaning of the word. What does meditation have to offer us if we used it the right way? Well, there's got to be something good about meditation. What do you think is its biggest virtue?
It allows us to explore our mind and who we are on a very deep level. So meditation in the systems that I study, it's all designed at actually gaining insight into how things actually work, which just sounds very abstract and you can't put your finger on it, but I'm trying to think. I mean, when you start observing the mind, you actually can see how crazy it is and you start taking things so seriously. So what it does is it creates a little bit more freedom. So the areas where you used to react to things, like you have a nice strong reaction to fat people, right?
Exactly, right.
If you start watching that reaction, you kind of just it loses its power. And what happens with prolonged meditation is you're not as reactive. I mean, with me and the practices that I've done,
right,
I've completely cleared myself of depression and anxiety.
That's amazing. I mean, that really is extraordinary.
It's not atypical for people that do those practices. And I don't understand how they work, because you just sit there and all of a sudden things change. And I'm not exactly, it's a direct experience.
Right.
It's not what you're thinking. There's some sort of direct experience.
Right. You said earlier, right, that only 10% of the mind do we use and 90% operates pretty much outside of our control?
Yeah. Kind of sad, huh?
Well, here's the thing. Is that where religion, spirituality, and all that kind of stuff goes? Is that why it's so important? Because most of the mind is working its own situation and not controlled by us. Do you think this is why we love myth and religion and all that? Because, we're not using 90% of stuff, yet 90% of our mind is active and we need something big to occupy it.
I wouldn't think of it that way. I mean, the truth is, the reasons we're attracted maybe to some of that myth and religion, that sort of stuff, is actually because we have certain programs in our subconscious that create that attraction. When you're talking about the food thing, I've worked with people to help them overcome you know, eating disorders. And people have beliefs like food is love. You know, you've heard that before, you know?
Right, right.
Or food is my only friend. So if you are overeating and food is your only friend, and that's your subconscious belief,
right,
and you might actually consciously believe it too, if that's in there, you're not going to be able to stop because it's love. I mean, you've equated that. If I could, you know,
right,
and the methods I use, I go in and I actually pull out that belief that food is love, and it changes everything for people.
So once they
hear
it,
no longer
once they
are
hear
driven
it, yeah,
to
they
food.
They hear it out loud, and then they have a breakthrough. But while they're making love to the ice cream at 3 a.m, put more syrup, 5 more scoops, go back in, find the pound cake, put a piece of pound cake on top of that vanilla ice cream, and maybe some apple pie. They're crazy.
But the only
in love.
Reason they're doing all that is because they want love in that moment.
Right.
So if you take away the belief that food is love, they're going to have to try to find their love somewhere else because they no longer have the drive to food because it's not what they thought it was.
When you work with somebody like that, that must be critical when they see they're going to break away from the food, but you have to find something for them to engage in that's healthy and positive, right, to offset the absence of that food?
Yeah, that's going to be a critical thing so they can realize they can get love in other ways.
Right.
Because if that's, sometimes that's enough, I mean, just pulling it out, because people have multiple beliefs, right? You know, people can believe that they're loved by their family, they're loved if they have a religion, they're loved by God, or, you know, so, and sometimes it's as simple as that, plugging into the other beliefs that they got.
Right.
I don't really have to find anything new. They've already have them there. And it, I mean, this is what's so, I mean, I'm a hard science person, and I stumbled onto this stuff while I was recovering, getting rid of, you know, my own repressed memories and changing things. And literally, it was dramatic. I could be in one place in a second and I could go, you know, I could change a belief and all of a sudden I don't have that craving anymore. And it's bizarre. I don't understand it because it's like total soft woo-woo kind of stuff. But literally, I go in, I do a certain, you know, it's a certain kind of, I don't know, method.
Mm-hmm.
And I've removed the belief from them. Which sounds kind of weird. And it changes, right, like that, instantly.
Wow.
All of a sudden, they are not a person who believes food is love. There might be something else that drives them to eat, but that one's gone. And if that was the primary one,
oof.
Some people have the belief that, you know, they can't outperform their parents
right.
on a subconscious level.
Right.
Somewhere that got put in there, that it's not okay to do better than your father or your mother.
Hmm.
So in some cases, that means they have a glass ceiling, right, that they can't achieve more. But also, in some cases, it means they can't lose weight. Some people are honoring their parents by having
wow.
diabetes, just
wow.
like their parent who was overweight.
Wow.
It's weird.
How
but they're
do,
in there. I mean,
yeah.
and you can find these different beliefs, and it changes things, because it's literally...
How do we know they're not just making this stuff up? You know what I mean?
So,
like,
but,
it sounds so convenient, and it sounds like, oh, I got it. You're the one human being who doesn't have a survival mechanism. You're lost in your stupid fantasies, and you're letting your fantasies kill you, and we're supposed to believe that. Instead of saying,
that's
you're lazy, get
nobody
up.
Believes
you're lazy,
that stuff.
Get up. You're lazy,
nobody
get
believes
up.
That stuff. You're talking conscious mind.
Well, you
is
know,
the
they
stuff
say
that's in the
that.
Subconscious mind.
They say that. You know, it's always like, I watch Shark Tank all the time. They always start when they're not going to get a deal in Shark Tank. It's always about how they beat cancer when they were 11. They start to cry, never thought tomorrow would be possible. And thank God there's always one shark who says, grow up, you big baby. That has nothing to do with anything. You're using that right now because you can't get the deal you want. So I don't know. I've got to try. I try to be understanding. But you say to yourself, you live in a world, everybody knows something like obesity can kill you. Everybody knows this. You could go to the middle of the African jungle and they're going to say the same thing.
So are you saying that everybody who's obese that knows this is just lazy?
Absolutely.
You really think that's
a good explanation? That is such a good... See, that's something you could wrap your mind around. See, that I don't need a textbook or a genius to tell me. People are lazy. They lie to enable their laziness. And I would cite Cain and Abel and everybody since. So that to me makes sense, but I love exploring this because
yeah.
the thing is, we still haven't cracked it. I mean, one way or the other.
You're being rational.
I'm trying.
You're totally being rational, and I am totally irrational here.
Well, thank you for thank you for your irrationality to illuminate our dilemma, because it is a big dilemma. I mean, it's hard to see a country that's doing as well as we are compared to other countries with the number of people that destroy themselves right in front of us. It's a heartbreak. It really is. Do you?
Well, you got to have an exit plan.
Well, that's, you know, that whoever has that. When do people ever have that?
I think a lot of people in America have obesity as their exit plan.
Oh. Oh, I thought an exit plan from obesity, but obesity. Oh, I get it.
Obesity is the exit plan.
Oh, you're so good. Will you come back on the show and talk more about these complex issues? They're so important to people. I love having you on the show. I don't believe it. We did a half an hour. Do you believe that half an hour has gone by?
It just flew.
You're probably saying, my God, it was like 3 hours. These questions are grueling, and you are annoying, Ed. No, thank you for your patience.
I read your thing beforehand. It's like, oh, sarcastic. This is going to be fun.
Oh, you're great. You're such a great guest. You know, we get to benefit from your passion with this, because I do like to poke around and ask a lot of questions, and I do like to maybe go over some of the assumptions in society. So thank you for indulging that, for answering so many great questions today. And also, we look forward to the book. It's going to be called Would You Like to Change That? And Would You Like to Change That? And would you enjoy coming back when the... well, I'll tell you what, we'll have you back before the book comes out. It's going to be a busy...
I've got a new publish date, which is going to be November 22nd. We'll do the launch in January, but my book person pushed me up.
Oh, good. Okay, excuse for us to get more interviews in with you. All right, terrific. We will make note of the new date, and we're always on the lookout here for headline stories that play into the expertise of the guests that give us the most on the air. There's some people that don't have a lot of patience with us. They don't have a lot of depth in their answers. You're the other way. You're awesome. So we're going to be watching headlines that might relate to your background and expertise, and maybe you'll help us with those as well.
Fabulous.
Oh, thanks, Doreen. All right, Dr. Dorina Rode, our guest today. Gosh, was this a great segment? Dr. Dorina Rode. Her book is coming out sooner. Look for it in November. Go to her website to keep up on the publication date for the book. But be on the lookout. It's coming out earlier than expected. Would You Like to Change That is the title. And the website is www.dorinarode.com. This is The Ed Till Show on Starcom Radio Network.